Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 46. Welcome to episode 46. I am currently sat, caffeine machine, the hut, just waiting for Mick to turn up. So Mick, you will have seen before, or definitely heard before, from previous episodes. Mick said, why don't we get together and talk through everything that's happening in the industry, the Porsche industry, the Porsche community, the Porsche culture, and do that at Caffeine and Machine. So without further ado, here is Mick and I talking about everything to do with Porsche culture for episode 46, the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. Cool. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and now I've done my little intro. I am joined by Mick. He turned up 10 minutes late, but that's par for the course. Mick, hello mate, how you doing?
Good morning. Oh, it was morning when I got
it
up.
It was, yeah.
Or when you got up, probably.
Yeah, so we're actually at Caffeine and Machine, the hut. I thought I'd take the opportunity to work here for a bit as well, doing my day job stuff. And Mick's suggestion was we spend some time having a chat here rather than doing it anywhere else, which is a good idea. So it's a fairly nice day. Yeah. Mick, how are you generally, mate? Are you all right?
Good, thanks. Good, thanks, Paul. Yeah, yourself?
Yeah.
You recovered from your massive North European trip?
Yes. Well, the car hasn't, but I have, personally. So the car still needs... So, by the way, if you're listening to this and you haven't paid attention to any of the previous episodes, I've got a 2015 Porsche Cayman, and I think probably three episodes back, I talked about that trip in its entirety, what I did, and the fact that I reversed it into an underground car park post and damaged the bumper, so... but the car, before it even got fixed, went off to Dave the Trimmer, who's kind of a Porsche specialist for interior trimming, to have the seats and the dash and all sorts of bits and pieces done. So that car has not yet been fixed, and it's still sat at Dave the Trimmer's with a bruise on the back of it. So no. And then we've got Flat 6 show coming up in July 6th or 7th or something like that. So it's going to be fairly compressed to get the car back, stripped down, the bumper back off to paint and get it all fixed and back together again. So the answer, the long answer to that is no, Mick, it hasn't.
Okay, fair enough.
It's still a bit of a mess. Yeah. But it's fixable, you know, it didn't look that bad. It's not that bad. Yeah, it's just I'm a, you know, a bit of a girl's blouse.
What I was going to say to you was, I'd be tempted to leave it, and then you could look at it, and then that would remind you of what a great trip you had.
No. I've covered this before, but patina, I'm on board with, right? A little bit of gravel rash, little stone chip. Yeah, fine. This was idiocy and damage, so I can't go with that.
Reversing in an underground car park when you're tired,
I've done 7.5 hours driving.
Exactly, that's a long time to be driving in a day, isn't it?
Yeah, it has. And that was with a slight break in the middle, but it's still a lot of hours.
Yeah.
And you know what these places are like. They're not like a normal car park when they're under a hotel. You know, you get like a tiny, the gap, you can't, obviously can't see this if you're listening, but we're sat in a gap and it's just about the size of a garage, really dimly lit. Parking sensors did absolutely nothing. And it was like a 2 mile an hour bump, but it's been enough to...
Yeah.
To sort of crack the back of the bumper a little bit. But it could be plastic welded and filled and painted and you wouldn't even know. So, yeah. And the body shop I've got are brilliant. So, yeah, they're good.
Cool. What was your favourite bit? Nürburgring?
The whole trip was amazing.
Stuttgart, the museum.
No, I mean, that was good, don't get me wrong. But I would say doing a lap of the Nordschleife and then going straight onto the GP circuit and doing 15 minutes of the GP circuit. Though you couldn't, we didn't plan for that, and you couldn't plan for that, I don't think, because, you know, you never know with the Nordschleife whether it's going to be open for 1 minute to the next. Someone's just got to have an accident, and that's it, it's written off. And they make getting onto the GP circuit the most laborious, painful thing to book. It's just so awkward. So I would say, I'd say that out of the whole trip. Because I finished that, you know, it was the first time I'd ever driven around the Nordschleife in that car. And I hadn't planned necessarily to do any laps in the GP circuit, but just the experience, you know. It really taught me how good those cars are. Even a base model came in, which isn't set up for track, it's a road car. It was, I wasn't getting anywhere near the limit of that car. Nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And that was on Pilot Sport 4S. So cup twos with a decent driver. Yeah, you'd have.
Was it, what was the temperature there? Because I mean, you're.
Oh, low. Maximum of 10?
Yeah, you've got to be high. You the temperature's got to really be above, well, they say 12 degrees for cup twos. For them to work properly.
Yeah.
But then you could once you've done a few laps, you can see the pressure's going up, and you know you can push on a bit.
Yeah. And that's on the kind of digital display, that's what I had the whole time, is the tyre temperature.
Yeah.
Or tyre pressure, sorry. Or tyre temp. But yeah, and you could see the temp increase, particularly on the driver's front right. That went up quite a lot, because there's lots of left-hand turns for that circuit, so you're always leaning into the right-hand corner of the car.
But, yeah. Could you feel the left rear going at any stage as you were?
Ish. Well, I don't. You know, I think the reality was that I was pushing harder than I ever have with that car, for obvious reasons, because it's a bit safer and there's some decent runoff. But I wasn't kind of, I think in the back of my head, I always had this thing of, you know, I'm not experienced on track. I haven't taken that car to its limits before, and it would be very easy to kind of go a bit beyond that safe space. You know, I was probably 7/10, I reckon. So enough to know you're kind of leaning on it, but nowhere near the limit of me or the car. So I'm pretty sure if I was given a car that I didn't care about, and I actually said this to Joe, who I was with on track, I think I'd be probably quicker if I had a little clear 182 or something like that, that, you know, it made a mess of it, I don't care. But I'm so precious of that car, the idea of spanking it, not being insured on track, and then having a mistake you can't undo. So, but you've done loads of track days in a row, and you're...
Yeah, so I've done about five or six recently, in the last couple of years.
So if you're listening to this, Mick, and you've not listened to one of the episodes with Mick and I before, Mick's got a 718 GT4. Is it the, not track pack, what it's called again?
Club sport.
Yeah. It is, full club sport.
Yeah.
And it's that geo setup dance for
not
track?
Yet. Okay. Not yet. I'm going to take it to Scott, I think, and have a chat with Scott down at Barnsport.
Yeah.
I mean, the tyres are wearing all fine, you know, so they're not treaded. I mean, I've done all those track days, and I've still got the original tyres. Well, apart from the front, I've hit a pothole.
Yeah.
So I've ripped the rears are getting low now, so they need to be changed within the next year, or I reckon.
Five track days and still on the same set of rears is quite impressive.
Yeah, that's what I thought MOT time, they're going to need changing this year, but they're still,
cause still
the,
good.
The last track that I did was Alton Park last September.
Yeah.
And that was one of those freaky hot UK days. It's Alton Park's up north near Manchester.
Yeah.
And it was 35 degrees in September.
Wow, okay.
And the whole car was just, you could feel it melting, after 20 minutes. You know, because that's a clockwise circuit, and it's all right-handers really, and you can feel when you're accelerating through the corner, you can feel the back left side. Really? You've got all time to cool down.
But it performs well on track, right?
Yes. And there's, you know, I'm nowhere near, like you said, anywhere near. I'm probably 5/10 of what the car can do.
And they're so capable, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so
it's having a confidence. So, you know, the one corner I always say is the great for your confidence is Paddock Hill at Brands Hatch.
Right, okay.
So, have you ever done
Brands Hatch? No, I haven't done Brands Hatch.
It's a scary corner because it's blind. So, for a motorbike, I don't know how those guys do it on a motorbike, because you're going in and then it's sort of like it sweeps to the right and it's downhill and it's blind corner. So,
which way is the camber? Is it banking in, or is it kind of off camber and it's. your neutral?
Let me remember, because it's sort of corkscrews down, because you go up to Druids in.
Yeah.
So, but you go in, you trail brake in, and then if you've got an instructor, you'll say, like, start powering in, and you're like I can't see the exit. So you're powering in, and then the car just grips.
Really?
And then it just rotates round. Mm. And then before you know it, you're up at Druids. So it's, you know, that's how you really build your confidence up, something like that, you know.
Yeah. How do you find track etiquette? I mean, it obviously depends on which track day provider that you go with, and they attract different groups of people. But
yeah,
I would say about the GP circuit session, it was 15 minutes, but like the Nordschleife, people maintain that same sense of, you know, I had a guy that came past me, you know, if you watch the video hasn't gone live by the way yet, but the road trip video from this year, there's a guy that comes past me on the inside, no, sorry, the outside, with two wheels on the kitty litter on the entrance to the start finish straight. Now, he was quicker than me, there's no question of that, but I wasn't kind of so slow that I needed to indicate and get out of the way. I could have held track position and been like, that's reasonable, you could pass me on the straight.
Yeah.
This guy just kind of, and it felt like there was an inch between the two of us. So you get that on good traditional track days?
No. So I tend to only do Porsche Club track days.
Fine, okay.
So you can only overtake on one side, and you can only overtake in the straights, and no overtaking in the corners.
Okay.
And the etiquette is the slower car indicates, pulls over, and then the other car goes past.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's, you know, you will get...
Get your moments.
You get people who run out of talent, you know, and might be misjudged the gap or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've not seen anything too bad.
Yeah.
Normally, the mistakes on track days are caused by people who get too tired.
Okay, right.
So,
interesting.
You know, some in the Porsche Club, they do two different types of track day. They do an open pit lane.
Yeah.
Which means what you do is, I tend to do is sit in the pits a half hour. Let all the
adrenaline go out. Yeah.
And then go out and then just build up your own speed. So go out. I try and go out slow and then just gradually build up.
Yeah.
But they also do a group track day. So you get, so Goodwood, for example, they'll have five groups of six cars.
Yeah.
I think it was. Same at Castle Coombe. Doesn't sound like much track time in the morning, but in the afternoon people start going home. So
Right. Your
track days, your time, and that's what you want, because you're fresher. When I did Brands Hatch, I was absolutely knackered at lunchtime.
Right. Yeah, because it's a fair track from where we are to Brands anyway, right?
So yeah, it's
3 or 4 hours to get
there. No, it's 90-100 miles. It's not.
Oh, okay, it's not as bad.
It's
just
north.
Okay.
It's North Kent. It's just outside the M25. So.
Right. Okay.
That's my local track. And when I was a kid, we were brought up in South East London. So.
Right. Okay.
And
cool.
At the time, you know, all the Formula One was there as well. So
yeah.
So it's pretty good. That's where nice. We should go and watch it. So. But yeah, no. So I mean, I haven't. There are RMA track days are pretty good apparently, and they do Porsche only as well now. So,
Fine. Okay. So
I'm looking at that. I think they do them at Donington. It's a track I want. I'd love to do.
Yeah. You're not done Donington.
Not done Donington. No.
That's hard. Which guy?
No. It's almost fascinated me since my love of Ayrton Senna is, you know, when they always talk about that lap at Monaco he did.
Yeah. One-handed.
Watch the first lap he did at Donington in the wet. I think it was early 90s.
Mm.
He started, you know, fifth or sixth.
He's passing everybody.
He was first by halfway around the circuit.
I mean, it's obviously is it 30 years? It must be 30 years, isn't it, this year, of Senna's passing at Imola, which is obviously, there's been a lot of fuss around there, lots of posts, and you know, it's good to reflect on that. So I've not been on track at Donington, but I've been at Donington for BTCC and various other bits and pieces, and looking at Craner curves, I mean, it's just, that's cool as fuck, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long, fast, there's some heavy braking zones, there's some long straights there. It's on an old airfield, isn't it?
So there's lots of these are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, converted airfields.
Yeah.
Mm, okay, we'll have to, so drop me a note, a DM, or reply to the post on Instagram, at RengineeringUK on Instagram, about whether you think Mick should take his 718 GT4 around. We'll peer pressure him into Donington.
No,
I
want to do Donington. It wouldn't take much arm twisting.
Yeah.
Or any chicken noises. That'll get me going. So.
Yeah. Good, good, good. I want to, before we move into talking about the 992.2 and anything else you've prepared. By the way, if you listen to any of these previous episodes, you will know I'm the master of being unprepared for a podcast episode. Mick is the antithesis of that and always comes to these things with a big long list. But I want to talk a little bit about my car and your opinion of, so I, where do I start with this? I've had a vision for that car since I started modifying it. When I bought it back, and I, so originally bought that car, had it for 3.5-4 years, sold it, bought a 991.2 Carrera T, 911 Carrera T, very briefly, and then sold it and bought my car back and started modifying it. The interior is one of, it's probably one of the biggest investments. I mean, it's costing thousands to do, so yeah. It's not like 50 quid and a pat on the back.
Well, you've done loads to it, though, haven't you? I mean,
I've done loads over the last.
You've done the door cards. You've done
all sorts. You've done bottom of the door dash.
You've done the stereo. You've done the handles.
Yeah, loads. Absolutely loads. But this was always, so this is about the seat centres being retrimmed.
Yeah.
This, I bought a steering wheel from a GT3. That being retrimmed.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Literally all sorts. The gear gator, the gear shift, GT4 gear shift.
And you got that from Basel, didn't you?
And the linkage is from a GT4.
Oh, yeah.
And the gear knob is, yeah, it's a custom-made gear knob that's in the spirit of a Carrera GT with the Brand Engineering R logo etched into the top. Is, so far, I've been really happy about the choices I've made. And everything I'm about to say is not a reflection on Dave the trimmer or his work or his, because he's had absolutely nothing to do with the ideas, right? If I reflect back on, I've tried to take inspiration from different things, and that might be the problem, is the Paul Stevens Le Mans Classic.
That we saw at Flat Six, the first year
we went to Flat Six together. That was buried in my mind as an example of taking a white car, introducing some really classic period design, but it being fresh, and I've always had that set in my head. So that was a bit of a massive influence. Singer, for obvious reasons, you know, lots of influence there. The Duck and Whale car, so Lee's Duck and Whale car, again, strong influence there about the kind of race-inspired, but not too race-inspired 911R kind of feel, ST-ish. I think, Now I've seen some photos of Dave's work, which is exemplary work, and I do want to like reiterate that. I think I've gone too far. I think I've had too many ideas and tried to execute all of the ideas in one place, and I think it's going to look, cluttered mess.
But just from the seat trims?
From the seat trims and the steering wheel, yeah.
Yeah. So I've not seen the steering wheel yet. I think the seat trims look nice. I like them.
Okay.
I think it suits the car. I love the Re-engineering logo. I love the way you've got that stitched in. And you've got the video of that being done. I quite like that.
Yeah. No,
I've not seen the steering wheel yet. So.
Oh, God, the steering wheel. Right, so the steering wheel.
That's probably the cheapest thing you could change it back, is. Though. So it's not a, I wouldn't,
it's not a game changer, no. Right? It's 450 quid.
Yeah, I've not seen it yet, so.
No. Let me explain what the idea was behind that, and you'll probably have a sharp intake of breath, but I always knew that if that was a step too far, it's 450 quid, which is a lot of money to makes a steering wheel 900 quid just for trimming, a lot of money, but it's not completely irreversible, right? Seats are way too expensive to do anything else with. I will if I have to, because I love that car so much I don't want to take any kind of halfway measures with it. So if, and I'm going to get Mick to have a look in a minute, and I'll pause, and you won't notice this, but it'll probably break for a second. A 991.2 GT2 RS. So we'll pause for a second. Mick, have a look at Google 991.2 GT2 RS.
Oh, you got another one.
And we'll pick it back up in a second when Mick's had a look at what that steering wheel looks like from a design perspective. Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this episode, and if you are enjoying this episode, I have a very small request to make. I'm really trying to grow the YouTube channel at the moment, and whilst it's always nice when people naturally gravitate towards it and
subscribe and like and share. I'm going to actually ask you, if you're enjoying this episode and you've enjoyed the Rengineering podcast so far, to head over to YouTube and subscribe. And yeah, let me know what you think of any of those episodes and if there's anything you'd like to see in the future. But for now, I'll head back to the episode, but just that small request. Thanks, take care. Need some lift music now. In fact, I'll insert a little bit of lift music while Mick's Googling this. So Mick, when that pops up, when that actually comes up, swap the red Alcantara you see for green. Okay.
Oh yeah, one of those.
Yeah. So that's the same steering wheel.
Yeah.
Head over to Instagram and have a look at the steering wheel, because I'll put a picture of it up. But now delete the red and imagine that's the green.
Yeah, is there a green one to look at?
No, there isn't, because it doesn't exist. Again, because this is all me kind of doing it on my interpretation of this stuff. Punchy, right? So green.
What is it? Is it that? Is it that green?
Yeah, it's basically. Yeah. So yeah. In Caffeina Machine, we've got this. The entire room is painted the same colour as the kind of contrast colour for my car. So it's like an Irish green colour. So that is the Alcantara colour that I picked for the seat backs. Okay, and the steering wheel. So that's the kind of, that's how those two things match, right? Now, it's bold.
But your car's white though, isn't it?
The car's white, yeah. So there's nowhere, there's not a lot of other colour. You know, no. It's quite a sterile colour and it's quite vanilla. So I wanted to go a bit.
I've not seen green seat backs. I've seen white seat backs.
Yeah, colour coded seat backs is quite common, right?
Yeah, I've not seen green though, so. I don't think I've seen green.
I've never seen
green. I've seen white.
Yeah.
On white.
The standard, because I've got the Sports Plus seats, or Sports Package Plus seats, whatever you want to call it. So they're not carbon buckets or anything like that, but they are the kind of upgraded seat. And the seat shell on the back is this kind of weird silver satin finish that doesn't match anything else in the car. So I always knew I wanted to do something with that. Whether that something was paint, you know, take a sample of the green and paint them the green, or use Alcantara. Now, when I was at Dave's and we shot the kind of, because we recorded this episode, so you get to watch me making these decisions live, got this big swatch of all the different Alcantara greens, and then, you know, literally overlay the Pepita with the green parts of the Pepita, the Irish green, because my key ring is Irish green as well.
Yeah.
Standard Porsche key ring. I was trying to match it all up together to try and get it all kind of tied in. And I picked what I thought was a great Alcantara, right? It looked dark, but the swatch is like 2 inches by 1 inch. When you scale that to the size of a seat back, and then you get some sun on it, so it's not kind of, it looks way lighter than I expected it to. So, I don't know. And the other thing I would say as well is small sections of those colours didn't look like they clashed. Grow that to the size of a seat back, I think it clashes. Yeah. And I hate colour clashing, right? It all has to be of the same family of colours. You know, like those hues have to match for me. At the moment you get something that is, oh, that doesn't look quite right against that, my neck hairs go up on the back of my neck. So,
I'll need to see it in real life.
Same.
I think you might have to get your missus to dress you before you drive the car.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Oh God.
So, you know, you might want to go full Miami Vice. Go white slacks.
Yeah.
White shoes. Yeah. No socks. White jacket. You know. Push your sleeves up. But you know, the one I'm thinking of that's popping into mind is, you know, when. Is it Sam seen through the glass?
Yeah.
He got that GT3.
He did, yeah.
And he put those Pasha seats in.
Yes.
Now, you know me, I love Pasha.
Yeah.
But I was in two minds about, still.
And Tony hated it, right? Did you listen to that episode where he's...
No, I didn't
listen. Oh, mate, you need to listen to that.
Yeah.
Hello, Sam, by the way, if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
Sam was really happy. I think he still was happy.
And then dates his car. It's, you know, he loves it.
Yeah.
But it's not to everyone's taste.
No.
Now, you it might grow on you, Paul. So
it is.
You've made the decision.
Oh, I'm all in, mate. Yeah.
Don't do a rest.
It's too late now.
Don't get the Stanley knife out and start.
No, God, no. And I, you know, bless Dave, right? I am the world's worst customer. I do know that. He's been sort of long suffering through this entire kind of 2 or 3 weeks of him working on the car, and he's working his heart. I know that much, right? And he sent me some photos, and he did even reassure me. He's like, look, in fluorescent light, in a, you know, yeah, a bay, they have to have strong light because they need to see everything. They can't have, like, you know, dimly lit light. So it might look absolutely fine. He's pretty convinced that it's going to be a good thing. For me, I'm just a little nervous that, it's like I said, it's a lot of money. And I knew going into it, I was going to be a bit punchy. I made two commitments to doing this. In fact, this goes for the Ram 550 as well. Try something, be bold, and it doesn't work, don't live with it.
Yeah.
Even if it costs more money to back out and redo it, that's the right thing to do. Rather than you've made this commitment and actually it's not the right thing and it hasn't paid off, but you live with it because you've sunk money into it, right? It's about that for me. It's about the balance between kind of having the guts to try something new that you've not seen before, but also being willing to back out and kind of go in a different direction.
It sounds like you're not happy with the steering wheel.
It's not that I'm not happy with it, because I've not even seen it.
Yeah.
I'm just having seen the seats and the seat backs, I worry that the kind of that retro classic Porsche stuff,
the kind of
what I'm trying to do is blend historic Porsche with a modern car. Anything like that, you always run the risk of it looking like a pig's ear because it's not a classic car.
Yeah.
So to kind of to bring some of those elements into something modern, you run the risk of it looking like a pig's ear. But I said that when I was choosing it, and I said to Dave on the video, and you can watch this and watch me saying it, Dave, this is all on me, mate. None of it's on you. Yeah. So I'm making these wild decisions while he sits there and goes, well, we'll do it for you if you want. Yeah.
So the other thing I'm thinking of, when you're looking online and you see a convertible 911, and you click on it and the interior is bright red.
Yeah.
It's not all one colour, is
no,
it?
It's
going to be broken up.
Yes.
So that's the thing
and
about it.
And there's continuity, right? Yeah, so the lower half of the dash is from a GT4, and it's that kind of dark grey Alcantara.
Yeah.
The opposite parts of the steering wheel have introduced that same dark grey Alcantara. That dark grey Alcantara lives across the entire interior, right? Yeah. So there's lots of kind of sedate, you know, monochrome colours in there that will pull it back down.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Anyway, we're going to find out in probably today.
Yeah.
I'll get sent some pictures through of the steering wheel.
I do reserve the right to take the piss.
I wouldn't expect anything less. I will obviously be posting photos of my either inspired genius or absolutely massive fucking disaster, and you can laugh with me or pat me on the back for being brave, but we'll see. Let's move on, Mick, because I'm just looking at the time, a quarter of an hour left, so let's talk a little bit about whatever you've planned. What have you got in the bank that you wanted to talk about?
So there's one thing I found which I wasn't too bothered about, but I found all the Dakars. The Dakar is the main thing at the moment, right?
Yeah.
There's 20 on the market for sale.
Yeah.
So I was looking around and I found a Dutch company called Kalmar.
Yeah, I've heard of Kalmar.
So I was looking at them, and then I didn't pay much attention to it. And then I went to football with Connor the other week.
Right.
And he was telling me about a guy at work. He's got a Kalmar air cooled. I think it's a 993 Dakar in the car park at his work at Red Bull. So I went back in. Yeah. I just thought it was 996 and I had a proper look.
Mm.
You can take your Cayman, you can take a Macan, you can take a 996, you can take an air called a 964 or a 993, and they'll do a full Dakar.
So Kalmar will do this as a project?
Yeah.
Wow, I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, no, so it's a, I mean, they look really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, so you could take a cheap, what's the cheapest 996? 15 grand?
12, 15,
yeah. So you can buy that. Now for 50, I think it's 50,000 euros or 45,000 plus tax, wherever it is. And they'll do they do a little tweak on the engine. You know, you can buy different packages with them.
Of course you can.
But they'll do that. They'll obviously
jack it up,
bigger tyres. They'll put all of the Dakar, the decals on that you choose, and put the roof rack on, you know.
Wow.
They do, there's loads of, it looks really cool. But the fact you can do it through the range is pretty amazing.
I've never heard of anything like that. Yeah. So
have a look. Go on there.
I will, mate. Yeah. I mean, I follow them on Instagram. Yeah. I will reach out and see if I can get something.
Someone's
happening.
Done a. No, they haven't. That's something else I saw. Ignore that.
Someone's done somewhere.
I thought I'd seen it on YouTube.
Mick thought he had an idea then, but it passed.
No, I haven't. I'm just making shit up. So.
Well, I'll check out Kalmar. And I'll see if I can get them on the channel.
Yeah. I don't know where in Holland they are, but
no idea.
Yeah, I mean, if
the trip to Amsterdam, mate, that's what.
Well,
I
it's not far from. It can't be that far from Spa or the Ring.
Yeah.
If it's in that area, which I should imagine it might be, but
we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
I'll have a look.
Yeah.
What else you got, dude?
So, I often go on Auto Trader, and like I said, I search Porsche NE, and I go highest price first.
Yeah.
So, on there the other day, there's the highest price Porsche at the moment is a Carrera GT.
Of course, yeah.
There's only one.
Yeah.
Then you go into, there's quite a few 918 Spiders.
Yeah.
And then you get, and it's about page 20 before you get to the first GT4 RS. That's how much high-end Porsche is up for sale on the market at the moment. But that's where I saw 20 Dakars.
Mm.
One thing I did see, there was a couple of Turbo S's, 330K. I thought, that's a bit punchy. Then I looked at the detail, Brabus Turbo S, I thought they were Mercedes tuner, but they're doing Turbo S's now. So they're taking Turbo S.
Who's the customer for that?
I've got no idea. Someone who likes a Turbo S, but
they've said a Mercedes.
They've said that's not fast enough.
I mean, I've not been out in a Turbo S, but I think it's pretty fair to say that they're a missile, right?
I think they're quite quiet, so maybe they do something with the exhaust. But 650 brake horsepower?
More than that, aren't they?
But they Brabus take it up to 820.
Yeah, I mean, that's just ludicrous, mate.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a couple on, there's a convertible.
Convertible Brabus Turbo S.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what the depreciation looks like on one of those. Yes. Yeah.
Well, they're 329, I think they were.
329 grand. Yeah. If you're a Colombian drug lord that's got to get rid of some cash on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, but they're, I thought they were a German tuner, but they've obviously got a tuning shop in the UK. I think it's up north somewhere.
So you take delivery of your Turbo S and then you drop it to Brabus, Basingstoke, wherever they are, or you know Leeds or something, and then
it might be Leeds somewhere. I think it's somewhere up there, but But yeah, I never knew Brabus did Porsches. I thought they just did Mercedes. So.
Yeah. I've absolutely no idea who the customer is, why they would do that, because it's sewn up the Mercedes market. So I mean, that's like you've got AMG and you've got Brabus, you know, you've got Alpino, and you've got M.
And
you've
got Mantai Racing.
And Mantai for Porsche.
Mantai, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. How weird.
Yeah, and like I said, there's also 20 odd Dakars on the market as well.
Yeah, I mean. I think it's a reasonable expectation that people were speculating when they bought those.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be low run, low volume. They are a brilliant usable car, but they also have the potential to jump, right?
What I'd love Porsche to do, because you know, like we spoke before about a GT4 Touring or a Cayman R.
Yeah.
What I'd love Porsche to do is when you go in and select your 911, so say you select a base Carrera, they do a Dakar pack.
Right. Okay.
So they do it. So every range you could, so GTS, Carrera S, you could buy a Dakar pack that raises it up, jacks it up a bit, makes it a bit more usable for UK roads.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm driving it today. I was dodging potholes.
This time of year is horrendous anyway, isn't it? Because you've got to freeze thaw all the way through the winter, and they haven't got round to fixing any of the roads yet. So it is like, Belgium's pretty bad in points.
Yeah.
It's not that much different here, I don't think.
Fair play to. I mean, that's what I'd love Porsche to do something like that.
How much would you? Where's the mental price?
I've got no idea.
If you saw it and it was $3,000, you'd go, yeah, I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah.
If you saw it and it was $20,000, you'd be like, not a chance, mate. I'll take my chances with the potholes.
I suppose it's going to be, you know. So, do you want the decals?
Yeah.
Do you want all the roof rack stuff? Or do you just want the suspension and the...
I think it would be like, you know, if you go into the configurator now,
yeah,
and you spec something, it's a pack, or it's, yeah, a, it deletes, it says you can't have, and then, yeah, it takes a load of stuff off of you, which is really frustrating. Yeah. I think if it ever materialised something like that, it'd be one of those things. You'd be able to select it, but it'd immediately tell you, yeah, you can't have half the things you've just put on your car. Cool idea, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I quite like the idea of that. That's just where my head's at.
Yeah, yeah. Then. What do you think about that? If you're listening to this, head over to Instagram and, yeah, on the post, let us know, yeah, what your thoughts are about a pack. Dakar pack. Is Mick completely mad?
Yeah. I mean, probably the marketing people are going, nine, we make more money on the
But,
you know.
What else you got, mate?
Just a quick run through, because we haven't spoke since Formula One season started.
No, we have not.
So I can do a quick run through that. Max, Carlos, Max, Lando.
Yeah.
And then Max pushed to the line by Lando.
Yeah. So are you thinking Lando's coming into his prime and we'll see more?
I think Piastri will as well. I think that McLaren's a rocket ship now.
Yeah.
They did some upgrades recently and it's now, I mean, in Imola, they looked like they were dropping off. Mm. But then the last 10 laps, Lando just pushed Max to the line, you know, yeah, so. But as usual with Formula One, it's all about going on behind the scenes. There's,
yeah,
obviously the Christian Horney thing. And then there was,
yes,
the power struggle at Red Bull, and then there was the Adrian Newey leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't realise he was only a contractor at Red Bull. So this is the fine small print of how you get around a cost cap.
Right.
Contractors don't count.
Right. Okay.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Because I remember someone said before, Aston Martin sacked a load of people, mm, and they all turned up the week later in different T-shirts. Yeah. So they sacked them.
Yeah,
and then,
oh, of course they did. Yeah. Sacked with an exit, yeah, bonus and a, yeah, golden handshake and back in as a contractor.
Yeah, so what I was hoping that when we spoke last, because Lewis had made that gutsy move, yeah, to go to Ferrari, I thought, yeah, there was going to be a big shuffle around. So Lewis's seat still hasn't been taken.
Mm.
I think Mercedes are pushing hard for Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
Okay. They've got Kimi Antonelli was a young lad I couldn't remember last,
yes,
time. So
yes.
He's the Italian that they're bringing. He can't race Formula One because he's too young. So after Max Verstappen come in,
he was young. Isn't he?
Yeah, you've got to be 18 now. So that one, he'll always be the youngest. I don't think they can be younger than that now.
Yeah.
So Kimi Antonelli's coming through next.
Right.
And then where does Carlos Sainz go? So,
I don't know, mate.
So interestingly, at Imola, Andrea Seidel, mm-hmm, who used to do the Porsche Le Mans.
Yeah.
Was it Audi? It's Porsche, wasn't it, I think?
But
he was at McLaren. Now he's head of Sauber. So he's,
right.
So they're basically Audi.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's with his dad. Dad's links to Audi. They reckon he's going to go there.
Right.
But the next reg change isn't until 2026. So, you know, with Adrian Newey, if he goes to Ferrari, which is...
That's happening, mate. Yeah, I think everyone's pretty clear on that now, aren't they? I'm fascinated. This might be the thing that gets me back into Formula One again. You know, this move for... And I've always said, like, I'm not against Lewis, but I'm not a massive pro-Lewis guy.
Yeah.
But I'm a massive Adrian Newey fan. And I think I would love to see Ferrari start picking up constructors again,
yeah,
and kind of really mixing it up with Red Bull. It's just feeling like there's a, you know, there's some proper challenge in there, and Lando, yeah, coming through and McLaren building up again. You know, we've got the potential to be moving into a real 2026 onwards, a really new era of Formula One.
Yeah.
That bit excites me, right?
Yeah, and we don't know what the regs are yet either.
No.
So they haven't nailed down the engine regs, and the big teams are getting worried because they need to do some R&D in it.
Maybe that's an intentional thing, right? Stop the teams that are kind of the main constructors that have got the big budgets running off and doing 2 years development on an engine, and putting all the kind of smaller guys, you know, in the hole where they've got, you know, 3 months to try and figure it out, and actually. You push everybody back, and then suddenly you've got an arms race, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to be able to build the best, fast? I mean, it's still going to be, your expectation is the big companies are going to be able to put all their energy into that. But I just love the tension that's building up for it, mate. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and Red Bull have got to build their own engine now as well.
Mm.
So they've gone down that route. So they haven't got to, but they've gone down that route.
Yeah, yeah.
So it depends who you listen to on the Formula One, where Martin Brundle says he doesn't know, he's heard rumours that it's going to, the engine's not as good as it should be, but they've heard other rumours that it is, it's meeting its targets.
And again, some of that's going to be propaganda, right? Yeah, there's going to be deliberately released, sort of fake released stuff out there, so exciting, mate.
But you know, we spoke about the RB17, the Adrian Newey hypercar lot, and I spoke, one of the stats came out of it was the downforce.
Ridiculous downforce.
Downforce was capped at 1,700 kilograms, and I wasn't sure what that actually meant.
Oh, you've done some research?
Not really.
Okay.
But I listened to a Formula One podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said that one thing that Adrian Newey knows about is obviously the aerodynamics, because he was brought up in the floor.
Yeah.
The floor downforce of the car, the floor aerodynamics of the ground force.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't go for max downforce. He knows that causes problems, which is why Mercedes have probably gone too far the other way. So they've gone for maximum downforce, which is why their car's
bouncing along. Yeah, yeah.
So he knows that you can't do that. So maybe that's why he's capped. Maybe that's what he's done with the Red Bull, the race with the Formula One car. He's capped the downforce. So he knows if you go over a certain level,
it starts oscillating versus the spring rates.
Yeah. And then the driver's eyes start popping out.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it makes you feel sick when you're watching the camera, because it's just, especially on someone like Baku, where it's a long straight.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But watched Imola at the weekend. That was quite emotional in places with the Senna stuff that was going on. I love the bit Sebastian Vettel did. Have you seen any of that?
No, I haven't.
So he's got
the
MP4-8. I think it's the 8. He drove it around the track on...
Yeah, I saw a clip of that. Yeah.
And he had the T-shirts made up because they did a run on Friday. And they've got the Senna Forever in the Senna colours.
Nice. And a hashtag forever on the back of the wing. Right?
But just listening to that car.
Oh, mate, and that's it for me. That's what I'm looking for out of 2026, is, you know, lower aero.
Yep. So they can follow.
Bigger engines.
Yeah.
Bit more noise. Generate some emotion back into that, and then if you throttle back again, if you limit the amount of development time there is for the big constructors. Yeah. You're going to force it into a kind of much more, that's it for me, right? Let's see more of that. Because there's a reason why we all love those cars from that era, and it's because it's, as you remember as a kid, right, it's ear splitting, even, you know, in the 1940s when you were a kid. Like
I resemble that remark. Yeah.
But it was ear splitting, right? You had that, like, I'm not going to try and do a Formula One noise, but I'll see if there's a clip. And you just get almost like your ears distort from the noise. That's what people need, is that. Not, you know, a vacuum cleaner going past. And I think that's why Formula E, part of the reason why Formula E died a death. It's just very difficult to get excited about anything that doesn't create, you know, use all your senses, you know. You can smell the fuel, you can smell the kind of tyre heat, you know, all of that. That for me is where Formula One is emotive.
Yeah, I remember when I first took Connor to Formula One, we went out to Abu Dhabi and we were walking into the circuit, and there was one car on, it was practice, the first practice on a Friday, and there was one car on track. It was Kimi Raikkonen, I think it was in the Lotus then, and we were out, we weren't even on in the grandstand, and we had to put our ear defenders in. We've just won, so they probably were too loud.
Yeah.
But now the noise is, I don't like the noise. I prefer a more normally aspirated noise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, same. In the truest sense of waffle, I've got to shoot off. So I think, Mick, are you around next week?
Yeah, can I just say one more thing?
No.
The two things that you need to go and look at.
Go on.
I didn't realise, but Senna, in his time, was linked with Ducati.
Okay, yeah.
And they brought a monster Senna Ducati special motorbike out.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It is gorgeous.
Right.
Have a look at that. And also this weekend, McLaren have done a special Senna livery in Monaco.
Yeah.
That is gorgeous. It's yellow and green. Beautiful.
Perfect. So we'll that's Mick's advice. I'll go and check that out as well.
I'll post some pictures up. And
Yeah. Well, you know, either send it to me or I'll repost. Thank you, Mick, for joining me. We will pick this back up next week, and we will actually talk about the 992.2. But this week is a wrap for this week's Waffle. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're having a great week so far. Hope you've got some great trips planned. Get out in your car, see your friends, and I'll see you next time. Take care for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.